Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Your questions, we're answering them today. We're very transparent. We're a very honest group of people. Would you guys all agree?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We try
to be. So yeah, there's some tension right now because Elizabeth had to finish up a text and I'm trying to get this started. And just like normal, I cannot get this train going. So I'm happy we're
in all fairness, on the Intentional Parents Podcast, I was texting one of our kids.
Yeah, I know.
You did get Diane and Elizabeth to stop talking to each other.
That was amazing. I mean, it's all good. It's a good thing. It's just hard when you have to do something. So as you all know, we have a whole array of questions that get sent to us all the time. And I think it's really important to highlight that we do not do Q&As, we do Q&Rs. We have questions and responses. So we're going to respond to your questions. Also, you've been hearing the last couple weeks, and we just want to highlight it again that we so appreciate everyone that has signed up to become a legacy builder. And we've sent a bunch of you a copy of Sowing a Hidden Seed, but we did a whole episode on that 2 episodes back. You can go listen to it. But want to say thank you to everybody who has actually partnered with us in this way. And as we've talked about, Intentional is growing and it's in this new space where we just need to partner and let people know. And Phil, you were the one that told me, I said this on a couple episodes ago, but trust God and tell the people. Okay. And so we're telling people like, hey, we would love to partner with you in this way. And as Intentional grows, we can't do that by ourselves. So if you want to learn more, go to intentionalparents.org. You can check that out. Sowing a Hidden Seed, daily prayers for your child's spiritual growth. And also, thank you to everyone who's rated and subscribed. That's a huge deal. If you haven't had a chance to do that on Spotify or Apple or even YouTube, would you subscribe? Would you leave a comment? Would you even just leave a rating? Any one of those three, all three is best. Any one is great. So thank you for everyone that's done that. We want to respond to some questions. Everyone ready? Team, I'm going to throw some questions to you.
We're ready.
This is a good one and hard for sure. When your parenting styles differ, how do you find unity in your approach, especially with big decisions? For example, like schooling, maybe one parent's thinking public school, one parent's thinking homeschool. But when your parenting styles differ, how do you find unity in your approach? Who would like to take the first stab?
Well, this never happens. We're unified all the time in every parenting decision.
Can I just first highlight different is good.
Yeah,
but
that's good.
Neither parent has all the answers, and you really do need the balance of each other. Mm. So listening to each other throughout that with openness and humility and coming to solutions that satisfy both is the end goal. Mm. It really is the end goal.
Yeah, but getting there is hard. Phil,
getting
what do
there
you got?
Is hard.
Well, I think this is a marriage question because
true.
A friend of ours, a very good friend of ours, and partner with Intentional, Todd Newell. You guys know him.
Oh, yeah.
Love he Todd. And his wife, Anita, are the best premarital counselors I know.
Mm-hmm.
And they recently told me that one of the things they're learning is that when they start meeting with couples that are thinking about getting married, that they're not on the same page about a whole bunch of stuff, including major things.
Yeah.
And so one of the first things they're doing is helping couples learn how to get on the same page and stay on the same page. So, well, how do you do that? You got to talk to each other. Years ago, when I was on staff at a church in California, we had a doctor. He's with the Lord now, but a doctor of psychology who was a Christian, who was really well known and writing books. And he came to speak on a Sunday night, and we kept him over to meet with our whole staff on communication. And this guy's got doctorate and super smart. And he said, get your pens out, before laptops. I'm going to give you a definition of communication. So we're expecting this long, heady, smart, pithy thing. And he said, are you ready? talk to the guy. And so I think you talk with each other and you have to talk about your differences. So, you know, the verse I thought of immediately is from 1 Corinthians chapter 1, where the Corinthians were not on the same page about a whole bunch of stuff. And Paul is saying to them, I encourage you, brothers, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all agree. And in Greek, it speak the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that there be no schisms among you, divisions. So I think that can happen in a church, but it can happen in a marriage and it can happen in a family. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you guys, the Mosers, you talk about stuff. And, you know, in the Comer family, we talked about stuff and we tried to. And it just takes time. I mean, with Diane and I still, you know, we have to share what we each think. And speak the same thing doesn't necessarily mean that you have the same position. It just means you come to a point of agreement. So nobody's ever going to think exactly the same thing. Well, that's exactly what I wanted for dinner. Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly what I, you know. Yeah, so it doesn't mean, speak the same thing doesn't mean that you agree on a particular approach, but that you get past the point of division and you come to a point of agreement. So I think for schooling, and if you can't get there, that's where wise counselors come in. Mm-hmm. That's where you go get help. Like we can't solve this one. I mean, that's my thoughts.
So I think it took Phil and I a long time to come to agreement on the homeschool issue. Okay. Homeschool was new when we started. It was
illegal in California.
In the state that we were in, so there was risk. We knew that the authorities were looking for the ideal family to take to court because it was going to be a court decision.
You guys were so punk rock.
So we were. So you know.
Yeah. So our kids don't even know how radical we were.
So I really wanted to homeschool, and Phil was very reluctant. But it took us maybe a couple of years and for me, it was a lot of gathering information, asking a lot of questions about what were his concerns. Is it just, you don't like to do something different? Do you think that I might not be able to do this? Are you afraid how much time commitment is going to be for you? I mean, it was just like lots of questions that are not antagonistic questions. They are just like genuine. You need to tell me the truth. I can handle the truth. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes when we ask each other questions, we already have our defenses up. Mm-hmm. And so we come in like, this is my righteous cause I am, you know, wanting to go for. And that is not the way to come to agreement or to be on the same page.
No, we had to talk about, like, for instance, remember we had a big discussion about Bible. Because, you know, I don't want Bible to be a class just like math or reading. I said, I want them to have a passionate walk with God, not just think it's a class. So we had a big discussion about that.
Because I wanted to fill in the blank because I wasn't raised in a Christian home. So I went into my faith with very little Bible background. I wanted to fill in the blank, like from beginning to end, everything my kids need to know. And Phil, on that one, had a really good argument against that we followed, that we would take more of a discipleship group rather than an information approach. But it took a while.
But that took time of talking to get on the same page. So.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think talk about it more than you realize and actually just talk about it. A lot of the times you haven't made space to actually talk about it. I know Elizabeth and I fall into that trap often too. So that's a great response. Let's move on.
You guys touched on it, but asking questions and being really curious about why your spouse feels so strongly and differently than you do.
Yes. Yeah.
Because there will be moments where your spouse does feel really, really strongly. And then there'll be moments where you're differing on how you're handling something, but you haven't actually maybe taken the time to think about how you would like to handle it. And so you're assuming that your spouse must want to handle it that way. Well, maybe they're just reacting and they've not actually thought about how they want to handle that discipline issue or that child's anxiety or whatever it might be. And so taking time to talk, but really to ask questions with the intent to understand why your spouse takes the position that they're taking.
Right.
And you might find that you're not actually that far off the same page as you thought you were. It might just be some small areas that you need to really listen to each other and pray for discernment and be willing to try certain things. I think especially with school, I think gone are the days unfortunately, in some ways, where it's common for kids to do the same thing all the way through. It is a lot more of a like, well, we did this for a year or two, and then we did this for a year or two. That is more commonplace now. And I think given the nature of what we see happening in schools, just depending on so many circumstances, where you live, what's available to you, what the political landscape is in that county you're in, or whatever it might be, there is no, you really are having to take it one year at a time with one a lot of discernment.
Sure. Yeah. That's so good. Asking questions. That's so good.
Yeah.
Because then you're showing that you care about your spouse's. Why are you, ask why. Why are you feeling this and what's on your heart?
Yeah.
I love that. That's very wise.
Next question. When your child is hurting, how do you discern between their pain and your own emotional responses? And how do you carry both well?
Will you repeat that question? So I hear it. When your child is what?
Hurting. When your child is hurting, how do you discern between their pain and your own emotional response? And how do you carry both well? I think one of the things to maybe just highlight is discerning between their pain and emotional response is, I mean, sometimes I think, I'm going to speak for myself. A lot of the times it's pretty obvious if you start to be aware of like how your kids bring up stuff in you. So if you're aware, like, wow, they're feeling a lot, that makes me feel a lot. Therefore, I'm now all dysregulated in responding. Like, I think it's first getting to that spot where you can just notice like that happened. They had a big feeling or emotion that made me have a big feeling and emotion. And this happens to me all the time where my kids have something and then I'm like, oh, this is making me feel a ton. And I'm really, now I'm agitated or irritated or frustrated, but it's not necessarily because of something they did or their hurt brings up my hurt. So I think it's like slowing down enough to actually look and discern and go like, okay, you have your big over response, but that makes me feel crazy because I was never allowed to over respond. So I feel like I've never been heard and you're freaking out and I'm trying to allow you to be heard and give you space to be safe. But I'm like freaking out inside because I'm overwhelmed that's a thing for me. So I think it's just noticing that first. Mm-hmm. And then I think talking about it with your spouse, talking about it, even as your kids are older, talking about it with them. And, you know, even I'm laughing because I'm thinking about our older kids. Like, oh, who was it? What kid said this the other day? I can't remember what kid, but they basically said, hey, you can't use your upbringing as an excuse to be lame. And I was like, I am not doing that. Like, this is not an excuse. But like, it's always hard because you're like, well, I'm not using it as an excuse, but it's still a reality. Like, I'm not always on my best for lots of reasons. That's not blaming my childhood. It's also a part of it, especially when I'm dealing with my kids. So anyway, there's a lot of different things I could say on that, but I think it's just beginning to slow down and recognize that it's even happening before you even take the next step. You have to know that it's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think what I hear you saying happens more if you have handled their strong feelings and their hurt, if you haven't been able to be present with them in the moment, if they're old enough, when you go back and repair with them and say, I wasn't able to show up for you the way that I wanted to, that's when you can let them into it brought up a lot in me, and that's not your fault. That has everything to do with what I experienced as a kid, or that's the time you can bring that in. I think in the moment, there's a practice that I think Sally's talked about it on the podcast before. Maybe she hasn't, but like this idea of visualizing all of the things that you're feeling, what's coming up for you. So after you've been able to recognize that there's something happening in you, like you're saying, like visualizing yourself, putting it in a box with a lid on a shelf, either putting it on a shelf or handing it to Jesus to be tended to. It's important. We can't just shove it aside and act like we don't feel anything. But in the moment, we do have to be able to distinguish between what our kids are feeling and what we're feeling. And in the moment, we do need to try our best to be able to put aside, if it's a big thing coming up for us, to be able to put it aside so that we can be with our kids. And then the other thing that comes to mind is, for a lot of us, when our kids experience discomfort or pain, it just floods us with this desire to rescue them from it completely. It makes us so uncomfortable for our kids to be uncomfortable. And again, that's something we have to notice as their parents. We did a episode recently on parenting the anxious generation and anxiety, that like parental response to rescue your kids from distress and pain is a beautiful, like good-natured, God-given response, and healthy when it's actually because we need to protect our kids. It's unhealthy when it's trying to manage their emotions so that they never have to feel discomfort or
right,
pain.
Right.
Because what we need to do is be with them in their discomfort and pain and give them tools mm-hmm. to know how to navigate it. Mm-hmm. Now, that sounds great. That is so much easier said than done in the moment when all of their emotions are being directed at you, especially if you're the parent of a teenager, you know, to be able to set aside the direction it's going mm-hmm. yeah. and stay present to them.
I can't tell what face you're making. You seemed like when I was telling you about this, that you were you upset or were you like,
was I upset?
I don't know. I'm asking. Cause I feel like I'm wondering if you had like, you're like, you're not living into this. Is that what you were thinking?
No.
Oh, okay. I just couldn't tell. I'm just like, I'm looking, I was like, either you're tired or you're like, totally like,
what I'm tired. You're saying. It's really hot in here.
And you're like, what or, you're saying is, you just said it was hot in here. That's amazing.
That means it's really hot.
Or it's that we're in an attic.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's great, you guys. With this no windows spiritual.
And no air conditioning.
Yeah, it's good. Summertime, listen, sweating is of the spirit.
So I,
keep going.
I'd like to kind of jump off what you're saying. You're talking, you've said, both of you said, in the moment, in the moment, in the moment. Mm. So there's two different, I think, maybe elements of this. There's in the moment, which sure. everything you said is crucial. And very few people do that kind of examination. And I moment, think it's yeah. very important that we allow God to examine us even in the moment. Because in the moment is usually when we make our biggest parenting mistakes. But when you're not in the moment, when you're just alone with God, also coming from a family of origin that didn't have, you know, the capacity to be able to offer, didn't know Jesus for most of their years, didn't have the capacity to offer some of the aspects of God that I now treasure and feel like we're an important part of parenting. And that is especially the idea of comfort, that we bring comfort, not rescue. Comfort to our children. And I just love 2 Corinthians. If we've been hurt in the past, we are primed to be able to give the comfort that only God really can use to satisfy our brokenness. You know, here it says in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, talks about he is the God who comforts us. He comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort others. And I think the first others is our kids. When others are troubled, we will be able to give them the same comfort God gives us.
Mm, yes.
And then he talks about the more he's had to suffer, the more he's been able to give over the comfort. And especially when he's weighed down by troubles, to be able to then patiently endure the suffering that your kids are going to go through. So I think that is such a beautiful idea, especially when it's paired with a passage of scripture that I'm really been sinking my teeth into for a while now, and that is Exodus 34, and especially starting in about verse 5, 6, and 7, where Moses is talking to God about these people that he's just led. They're newly freed slaves. They've been a slave for 400 years, generation after generation. They don't know how to live free. And so they mess up big time. And Moses basically goes to God, and this is, you know, my very paraphrased version, and says, we don't really even know who you are. Can you at least just tell us who you are? And then he gives six qualities of who he is. The first thing he wants these people to know about who he is, the very first one is compassionate. He wants us to know that he is compassionate. So I think, Phil, you can tell me where exactly it is. I think it's in Colossians where we're told to put on compassion, almost like you put on your clothes.
Yeah.
So I just feel like in the middle of that. In the moment, you're not going to be able to think about this. Mm-hmm. But if in every day you're saying, I want to be like you, God, compassionate, mm-hmm. but I haven't been raised that way, or it's not natural to my character, or I don't know how to do this. Mm-hmm. And we're asking God to spiritually form us into people like himself, compassionate, comforters. Then I think in the long run, those moments are going to be a little bit, become slowly, bit by bit, we're going to have the capacity to respond to our kids' big emotions with the comfort by which we have been comforted when we have felt big emotions.
Yeah, what I hear you saying is you can't do that without God's help.
Exactly.
And so the you just mentioned Colossians, and it is Colossians 3:12, but it says because we've been chosen by God. As those who have been chosen by God, in other words, you have his spirit in you, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion.
Yes.
So I think in that moment, when the question was, when your child is hurting, well, I took that to mean a legitimate hurting, like mom needs to be there right now. You know, which you're saying, you got to discern that.
I think it's emotional.
Yeah. Emotional pain. Yeah, emotional pain. But yeah. I mean, is it real, or is it, are you just helping him feel better about themselves when in reality they need to talk about something deeper? But I mean, when it's a real hurt, to compassion is me feeling your pain in my heart. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's interesting. That's how God is with us.
Yeah.
So I think if we're walking in the spirit, which every parent should be shooting for that day in and day out, you know, breath prayers, you call them, just walking with God, you'll make less mistakes than if you're just flying through the day like, oh, I didn't see that coming, you know.
Or also doing the work before you're in the situation, knowing that you're going to be in that situation time and time and time again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this may sound cold, but I mean, the parent is to be the adult in the room. So like you said, Elizabeth, if you're able to lay aside your own need till later and meet the need of your child, I mean, that's parents lay down their lives for their kids, you know, in every way, financially, emotionally, physically.
Yeah.
You know, then fall into sleep exhausted at night, usually because you've been laying down your life in every way for your family, and just as God laid down his life for us. So, anyway.
And then in those times when you are not able, that's where the confession and repentance, the repair happens. Yeah. And I will still say it's not the perfect parents who raise kids who follow after Jesus and know how much they need them. It's the kids who are watching their parents change over their lifetime. Mm. And that transformation shows the power of God. So mistakes, repairs, strengthen relationships. Sure. Yeah. Don't break.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
And I think there's this beautiful gift that can happen, and the enemy can use it for evil. The spirit can use it for good, where you might not even know that you have a wound you need to address and allow God to heal, or are getting hijacked by something in your own story, until all of a sudden your kid might reach a new stage, or they might be dealing with a new issue. And it might be your kid's emotions that God uses to highlight there's an area that he wants to heal you to. Mm-hmm. I mean, perfect example. I was just navigating a friend issue, dynamic, hard thing with one of our daughters. And she's right at the age where I had to navigate some really difficult friendships, experienced a lot of rejection. And I was finding myself getting hijacked in all of my quote unquote advice to her. Mm-hmm. Was this like over need to protect her from hurt because I didn't want her to experience the same hurt I did, to fix it, to not make anything worse, to, and some of it was good and she needed that navigating, and but it got enmeshed with my own, all the stuff it was reminding me that I went through and then I have experienced as an adult too. And so I had to unhook and not let how my need to want to fix it so that she doesn't get as hurt as much as I did take over.
Yeah. Mm.
And so again, back to what Brooke said at the beginning, like being aware of it is more, gets you more than halfway there of being able to recognize, whoa, mm-hmm. I'm like,
this is happening.
Over responding.
I'm doing this.
Because a lot of my, I actually don't really love the term inner child anymore because I feel like it's overused, but yeah. It's the accurate one in this. My like childhood self is what is coming up right now, as well as their childhood self that's happening in real time.
It's so obvious when that happens, especially when it's obvious to the other people that are close to you. Because I would say in those moments, and you would know this for me too, there's a version of you that appears that's like not usually the version of you that's around.
Yeah.
And you're like, you would never be bothered by this or say that, or like this is so uncharacteristic of all the other parts of you. So I think also in a very kind, humble way, bringing your spouse in on that too is a part of it of like, hey, or if you're a single mom or a single dad, like community, like I'm kind of responding in some of these ways, you know, so I'd talk about it. We could talk a lot more about any one of these questions, but if we don't move on, we won't. So let's talk about what does it look like? This is a marriage question. What does it look like to support one another's growth in marriage and allow your spouse to change over time without holding them to their past? So what does it look like? You support one another, allow them to change without holding them to their past.
Do you think by allowing them to change, they're asking good change? Like being patient while a person changes?
I think positive towards Jesus. Positive, spiritual growth.
Maybe because we do change a lot and mature as we age. Certain things that used to fit no longer fit. We just change in general. So I wonder if it's a both and. Spiritually grow and change and heal and just change.
That's weird. It's a double meaning, but let's
answer
one.
Both. Okay. Let's
go spiritual.
I feel like we can, between the four of us, we can address both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's try spiritual. How do we strike the balance? Not strike the balance, but how do we support one another and allow them to change over time? So let's take it from the angle of maybe one is spiritually more, is more mature in a different space and you are like begging for your spouse to come along. What do you do in that? How do you allow space for them to change and not holding them to their past?
The first visual I got was, you know, in marriage to become one, yes. And that's a lifetime of becoming one. But we are two individual people and we are on the same journey, hopefully, headed in the same direction. But we might not always be on the exact same pace. One might be a little bit further ahead for a while, then the other one might be a little further ahead. Always having to check in and be together moving towards the same end goal of becoming more like Jesus. But we might not always be on this same exact parallel, same spot. And I think we have to keep that in our purview. And it might be as simple as maybe the husband is really growing and really diving into, maybe they're following, practicing the way and doing all of the practices and they're
what
loving
they
it and they're growing. Or maybe they're
Got you, John Mark. Got you.
And maybe the wife is buried in little kids and she's barely hanging on and she's not able to dive into all of those practices. Well, you need to have space for where each other actually are while encouraging the one who's drowning to continue to take one step forward at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think being kind to one another, tender-hearted, tender-hearted to where each other are is, again, won't get you all the way there. It's really hard when you're not in the same place. And we have so much compassion towards that. We talk about that often. If like one spouse is really wanting to grow and is feeling like the desire is not even there for the other spouse, that is a hard place to be. But I think, and again, easier to say, harder to live. But Jesus is so patient with the pace at which we go on the journey. He's very clear. The more I read the New Testament, especially, the way he speaks to the believers who aren't living how he calls us to live is very direct, downright harsh at times to the people who really do know better. But sure. He's also so patient, abounding in love and mercy. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. He's both. And so I think that's the hardest posture to take sometimes in our marriages, mm-hmm. and yet probably where it's needed the most.
Yeah. This makes me think of Peter writing in 1 Peter 3. The whole book is about suffering and suffering in relationships. 1 Peter 3 is about suffering in marriage, where, mm-hmm. where it's honestly hard.
Yeah.
You know, real disparity. It's addressed to wives, but it's a principle that I think works equally well with teenagers and siblings and mm-hmm. Husbands and just any relationship. And it's the concept that that our lives speak better than our words.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And real, the sign of spiritual maturity is not knowledge. Yeah. And sometimes you see people get all excited and passionate about things like end times or a certain aspect of spirituality. But if it doesn't affect your ability to be a kind, like you said, Elizabeth, and loving and compassionate mm-hmm. and gentle person, then it's not really spiritual maturity.
Yeah.
And so the idea here is that they will be won over by watching your pure godly behaviors, the NLT.
Yeah.
And that pure godly behavior is really the Galatians chapter 5 list of the fruit of the Spirit, that these are the kind of things that are going to be welling up mm-hmm. inside of you. Mm-hmm. Number one is love, is that you will be loving. So I think the character just goes a long ways. Fruit yeah. of the Spirit, patience, kindness, mm-hmm. gentleness. And also Romans talks quite a bit about accepting one another. And we're just really, I'm going to speak for myself. I'm not very good at this. I want everybody to be there right now. That's an ungodly response, not a spirit-filled response.
Sure.
The verse you just quoted, you did a great job with that, babe, First Peter 3. The phrase right in that verse, though, is if any of them are disobedient to the word,
yeah.
they may be one without a word. So
yeah.
So I'm not sure what's behind this question, but if it's like a spouse whose spouse is, you know, not wanting to grow spiritually, that's great advice for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I think in all things love. I mean, yeah. and that's, you know, when you're longing for somebody to change and you could see how they need to change, but they're not interested in changing, that's a hard place to be, but you can pray and you yes. can live a life that's attractive. That's what you're saying before exactly. them. You know, I thought of an interesting verse from Ecclesiastes, which I've used this in weddings before, but just, you know, two are better than one. It's Ecclesiastes 4:9, because they have a good return for their labor. But then the next verse, if any of them falls, either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. Yeah. But woe to the one who falls and there's not another to lift him up. So I think you have to remember, like, we're together in this. Yeah. And one is stronger than the other right now, but the strong one should do everything they can to lift mm-hmm. up the other one.
Yeah.
But if it's a, you know, when they said letting them change, well, I don't know what's behind that. If it's change for the good, like my husband just is reading the Bible too much, I can't talk to him. That's not a bad thing. Or is it like he's not interested in the Bible? You know,
there was something at the end of like keeping them tied to their past.
Yeah.
It almost seemed to me like this. I'm so used to them always responding that way. I've just decided they're always going to respond that way.
Oh, okay.
But like giving them space for maybe they are changing and growing and yeah. I don't have to just assume, well, you're always like that. You know, yeah. I mean, how often do we say those sure. types of statements?
And that brings up a question of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. that everyday yes. forgiving the behaviors that you see every day.
Yeah.
That you don't like.
Yeah.
If we hold that against people, I feel like that's the last thing we need to do for each other's spiritual growth.
Yeah.
Spiritual growth requires setting them free by forgiving them. And just like God's loving kindness is new every morning, ours needs to be new yeah. every morning. But boy, it's easy to fall into that kind of resentful,
totally
tough stance.
Makes me think of Birdie learned that your taste buds change every 7 years.
Yes.
Okay. And so Sloan is seven.
This is a fun one.
And they talk a lot about, there's lots of stuff Birdie won't eat. And because of that, Sloan is picky. I don't actually think she's picky. I think she's picky by osmosis.
I totally agree.
But yeah. She keeps saying, well, I don't like that. And because she's seven and Birdie is all logic, Birdie keeps saying, well, your taste buds change every 7 years and you're seven, so you should try it again because your taste buds probably changed. Which also makes me think of whoever quoted, you guys just quoted on the last Intentional Fatherhood podcast. I think Justin did. So I don't know who said it, but
Justin's
like my
literally
wife,
calling me right
I know,
now.
I see that. My wife has been married to seven different versions of me.
Okay.
So this is where I'm connecting this of like, the reality is, I think people change every 7 years. I think you know, like you are going to be married to different versions of each other.
Yes, definitely.
Especially the younger you got married.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot more rapid changing. And so I think holding out space, whether it's spiritually, mm-hmm. whether it's wounding, whether it's patterns of behavior that are really hard, or whether it's just preferences mm-hmm. or things that they used to be really into that they're not into mm-hmm. anymore. We just have to hold a lot of space for change in mm-hmm. general, both good and sometimes difficult, and patiently endure mm-hmm. with each other.
Yeah.
And sometimes the change will be change we've prayed for years and we get to celebrate. Mm-hmm. And sometimes mm-hmm. it'll be like, I'm going to look back and probably say this mm-hmm. wasn't my favorite season mm-hmm. of our marriage or our parenting journey or whatever. But we're going to change at least every 7 years, probably more often than that.
I love that because you're saying we're in it for the long haul.
Yeah.
And we're not going to turn sour on each other. We're in it for the long
haul. Spiritually, God is transforming us.
Absolutely.
And that's an ongoing process that goes on until we see Jesus face to face.
Yeah.
When we shall be like him, 1 John 3 says, for we shall see him as he is. But before that, it's constant change.
Yeah.
And God is the one who does the changing, and he wants to make our character more like him. Yeah. And so that's what we need all to remember. And I think the more we cooperate with his work, the faster we can become more like him.
Yeah.
The more I resist or harden my heart, the slower it's going to be.
True.
Yeah.
And I would like to add that a little bit of humor in some of those things that are only irritating, not, you know, deal breaking,
right.
not really hurting your life. A little bit of humor goes a long way.
Yes.
Yep.
As an example, and I'm not a very humorous person, so this is coming from me watching others. As an example, a very irritating thing to me for many years was that Phil complained about the rain when we lived in Portland constantly.
That was sin on my part.
Constantly. And I just got more and more strident and dismissive and angry in my shutting it down.
To be fair,
and then
when you say constantly, you mean constantly.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So this thing of seasonal affective disorder, it is real. It is real.
Yeah.
And Phil's a verbal processor. So he verbally processed for about 30 years.
Yep.
And it was hard on me because, you know, it was hard on me.
Because mm-hmm. I had 41 years of sun.
So let me finish. Let me finish. I wish I had done this sooner. I think it was Scarlett's idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the most effective thing. So he started complaining about the cold
in
the winter. Because it gets cold here in the winter. 300 at least days of full on sun a year. And rarely a day where the sun doesn't come out at some point. So high desert. It's not mm-hmm. raining. But it's cold. And so Scarlett came up with the idea of that he was complaining about the cold, and I was complaining about him complaining about the cold, and we were just on this like old person
trajectory.
You're
more than complaining, you were threatening. If you are now going to complain about that.
Let me explain. Let me finish.
This is great. Fight.
So she said, why don't we start a fund and we will fine Pops $20.
I said 20 bucks. It has to hurt.
You did. Okay, it has to hurt. 20 bucks. Every time he complains about the cold. And we were going to put it into a fund. Actually, at Phil's suggestion, his funeral
fund. Phil's funeral fund.
Phil's funeral fund.
Funerals cost money.
Do you know there is not one penny in his funeral fund? Because $20 is too high of a price to pay for complaining.
I don't know. I've heard a couple of complaints, but so, we'll let them slide under the radar.
We may or may not have rallied as your kids and bought you a nice Patagonia jacket.
That's true.
For Christmas, because you were complaining about the cold while dressing like you still lived in California.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you for that jacket. That's great.
So anyway, I'm just saying.
I would not have bought it for myself.
No, you wouldn't.
I wish that I'd learned that lesson sooner. I'm laughing about it, but the fact is I was getting crankier and crankier about it, and it wasn't making any difference. So sometimes a little humor.
A little humor.
Goes and bringing the rest of family in.
Goes a long way.
Goes a long way. Well, thank you for submitting your questions. Keep doing it. And I know we didn't get to more today, but it's just, again, it's so hard to respond to a good amount of questions. And honestly, let's just be who we are. We're going to go deep on a few. We're not going to go, shallow on a lot. So, but thank you for all listening today.